You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, Conroy ditches the controversial mandatory ISP filter, which was an election promise at the last federal election. Interesting that Telstra is to retry its NextG web filter service as well. ISP TPG faces court over 000 access, and telcos declare that SMS is unsafe for banking transactions. Also, if you've ever wondered what a copyrighted tweet is, well, wonder no more, as Twitter starts to withdraw them. And Adam Turner sips the latte with Scott Sheedy, founder of WP Down Under blog, about Microsoft's strategy and Surface tablets. Don't forget there's the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week. First up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Graham Callaghan.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Australian government changes tack on the internet filter, mobile text messaging declared unsafe for banking security, Microsoft to retire Windows Live Messenger, Telstra brings back NextG web filtering for a second try, and Kim.com's new ME.GA hits a major snag. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Federal Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator Conroy, has announced that the government is dropping its plan to filter all Australia's internet access of so-called refused classification material, replacing it with a plan to filter only a limited list maintained by Interpol, known as the worst of list of child abuse material. The government's previous policy had been widely condemned by internet freedom campaigners for being too wide-ranging and lacking in appropriate checks and processes. IT industry insiders had also condemned the old policy for being both impractical and ineffective for technical reasons. Senator Conroy, speaking on ABC Radio on Friday, explained that the new policy has been reached by agreement with the country's ISPs and explained the reason for the change.
This follows my call in 2010 for the Australian Law Reform Commission to review a category known as refused classification, and they came back earlier this year and recommended that a new category be introduced called prohibited content, which would include the worst of the worst in terms of child pornography. So I've accepted that recommendation.
Shadow Minister for Communications and Broadband Malcolm Turnbull welcomed what he described as a backflip, saying that the mandatory refused classification filter was always going to be bad for freedom and bad for the internet. However, some in the National Party and Christian lobby groups have condemned the new policy as not going far enough to protect Australians from other objectionable content online. Telecom's industry lobby group, the Communications Alliance, has declared that text messaging, or SMS, should not be considered a safe means of authenticating banking users for online transactions. The move followed revelations of a number of fraudulent transactions being carried out in Australia using a phone porting scam. SMS is widely used by banks as a second factor authentication to confirm large transactions or transfers to unfamiliar recipients. While business customers are frequently issued physical tokens for this purpose, three of the four major banks still prefer to use SMS for this purpose for personal accounts. The scam involves collecting enough information about the account holder to convince mobile phone providers to port the number to a new device, thus gaining access to the SMS security messages from the bank. In most cases, the only information required to port a service to a new provider is the phone number and either the account number or the account holder's date of birth, making it easy for fraudsters to carry out the scam. The industry, however, refuses to make the process more secure, arguing that the additional time and inconvenience for many thousands of customers may be seen as an attempt to lock in customers and be seen as anti-competitive. Following on from its acquisition of Skype a year ago and the recent release of new voice over IP services with Windows 8, Microsoft have announced that the Windows Live Messenger service, formerly known as MSN Messenger, will be closed in the first quarter of next year in all countries except China. The 100 million existing Messenger user accounts will be converted to Skype accounts, with profiles and contact lists to be preserved in the process, according to Microsoft. New versions of Skype have already been announced for PC and Mac, with new versions also tipped for iPhones, iPads, and Android devices. Telstra has announced the return of web filtering for NextG mobile phone services after being forced to put the project on hold earlier this year. In June this year, Telstra was embarrassed when it was found that they were monitoring the web browsing activity of mobile phone users and sending the data overseas. Users were not informed of the data collection and not given a chance to opt out, leading to questions over privacy and forcing Telstra to end the practice. The revised scheme Telstra have announced will be introduced in late November and will be entirely an opt-in service, allowing users to restrict access to some categories of material from their phones. Only data from users who agree to and sign up for the service will be monitored and categorised. Telstra acknowledged that they got the original design of the service wrong and are seeking comments from the public on the redesigned product through their blog. And finally, controversial file-sharing tycoon Kim.com has had his new ME.ga service shut down by authorities in Gabon, controllers of the .ga namespace. Citing concerns over intellectual property and cybercrime, Gabon's communications minister ordered his department to immediately suspend the ME.ga domain. Mr.com reacted angrily to the decision, using Twitter to accuse the Gabon government of being influenced by the United States. He claims to have an alternative domain name, but has not yet revealed what it is. I'm Graham Callaghan, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Now, the rural juror isn't in tonight.
No, no one's counting, but there's only five to go.
You built one, didn't you, Dr. Ron?
I built a Windows 8 machine. Did you play Journey?
Yes.
Oh, very good.
Did you play? No.
Windows 8, it is a journey.
Yes.
The big attraction for many people seems to be office compatibility.
This is a tech show. We should move on.
We should.
$48,000
per megabyte or something. Yeah.
I must admit, I didn't know whether 7 inches was going to cut it for me.
Oh, cute.
Ah, it's awesome. Ooh. That's awesome.
What do you do?
The Americans start to acknowledge this freelancer model because we've had it that way for a while in Australia now.
It's clumsy and dangerous to productivity.
Look, there, it's a dead pigeon.
Yes, down came the leg.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the third last Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. It's the Andrew and Graham show this evening. Hello, Graham.
Yes. Hello,
There's
Andrew.
Room to move in the studio this evening, isn't it?
It's nice to be able to spread out without that other two wasting space.
Someone's in Tassie. Someone's somewhere else.
Yes.
Yes. So we thought we'd progress along and keep on, because there's lots to talk about this week in the wonderful world of technology, a few ups and downs, a few ins and outs, all those sort of things, newsworthy, and some just scuttlebutt and hearsay, but nonetheless, we'll push our way through it.
There's always something going on. That's the tech world, though.
Yes, yes, it did indeed. Hey, I'm a week down now with my new toy, the iPad Mini.
Oh, yes.
I've managed to drop it. And,
yep. And did it survive?
It survived.
Excellent.
To its credit.
Yep.
To its credit. I picked it up and I was like, whoa, that can't be good.
How did it get a little dent or anything in it? Or?
No. It was pretty good, actually. Okay. It's got a little scratch in the corner now, but other than that,
okay.
That's what happens with these devices.
Get scratches. That's
to the credit of the build, nice and solid.
Excellent, because nice it feels very light. It's very thin, so you'd think that it might not have that structural strength in it, but... No, that's good.
It hit the concrete too. It was a big drop.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, anyway, that's life in the technological fast lane. I must admit, I'm enjoying using it. I'm finding the size is just perfect.
Interesting, isn't it?
Whether it's whatever device you have, whether it be Apple's or the other guys, all those sort of things, 7 inches, I think, is just nice. In the car, it's Wi-Fi just through to the device. I didn't get the Wi-Fi, the 3G Mini. I got
You use the Wi-Fi.
I use the Wi-Fi on the phone.
Yeah, because you've got one of those little portable hotspot things, haven't you?
I do, and I got truckloads. I've got 2.5 gig on my mobile plan, and that's plenty.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Plenty. And while the cricket's on, in the boring early stages of the test, I can actually stream while I'm driving home and listen to other radio stations, which is good fun. I'm really enjoying choosing different stations to listen to from all parts of the world whilst driving home over the Telstra network, which is good.
Oh, okay. And you, what are you using to do that? Are you using TuneIn Radio or...?
TuneIn Radio. A combination, actually. TuneIn Radio and other apps that are out there to do that sort of thing. Oh, I think it's a bit of fun.
This is a lot of fun.
And the audio quality on the iPad Mini is terrific, too. It's very loud compared to the phone, so it's good. You can
I've noticed that
the jam a bit.
Yeah, the speakers in the full size iPad are pretty good, surprisingly good for a device of its size. So yeah, I'm pleased to hear that they've maintained that with the iPod Mini. I was giving this some thought during the week about tablets and the size of devices. One thing that came to mind was that tablets were a technology that have been predicted by one of the staples of science fiction, which is Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember in Star Trek, they used to carry around a lot of information on what they called PADS, P-A-D-D, which was...
Did they?
Yeah, little... I can't remember exactly what it stands for. Something... It's personal something display device, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, little PADS, which were effectively tablets.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like the iPads and the Android tablets that we're just starting to get. And obviously, it's a technology that that has its place, and it's come of age. It's another one of these ones that was in Star Trek as fiction, as has become real life.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, the props that they used in Star Trek were quite often around about that 7-inch size.
That's a good note. I hadn't noticed that before.
Go and have a look, particularly at Star Trek TNG.
I will.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've come to the conclusions. I like 7 inches. I think it's very portable. It fits in the glove box of the car. You can take it with you wherever you go. It's not too big, although it does have a habit of being on the... that's the reason why I dropped it, because I thought, it's a bit small. Like, I had the two devices together. Yeah. So I'm just still getting used to it. But I'd say it's... if you were sitting on the fence as to whether or not to get a 7-inch device, I'd go for it, whether you choose Android or the Apple side of things.
Mm.
It's just a nice size, and it just works.
Yeah, well, as with all things, it depends on the application.
There you go. Warlock in our chat. Oops. PAD is an acronym for Personal Access Display Device.
Access was the word I couldn't think of. Fantastic. Thanks, Warlock.
Yeah.
I knew someone out there would know.
Oh, yes. It's good. Lots of emails this week, speaking of from our
yes, absolutely.
True and faithful listeners.
Thank you so much. Everybody who emails things in, we absolutely love hearing from you, even when we don't get to read them out on air every time. But it's fantastic to know that people are listening.
We've got to a point where we can't read them all out on air.
No, that's right. But people send in such interesting stuff and such good stories. So
good anecdotes, along the lines, all sorts of things like that. So without further ado, I guess.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the address to send in if you have something to tell us. We'll start off with Phil, who has sent in this. I think that's Phil.
Phil.
That's Primal, isn't it?
Could be.
Is that the same?
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
You have the email. I don't.
Listening to Monday's show, sorry I wasn't present to add my 2 cents at the time, but the kiddies take priority over everything. Dr. Ron's mention of installing Nova Launcher on his sexy beast of a phone prompted me to think about user experiences on Android. I installed Nova onto my similar phone as well, so... Android market is heavily forked, as we know. What that means is that there's different versions of Android that... are sort of split off from the main Android stream. While the base operating system is essentially the same, various OEMs have given users a very different experience with their launchers, and not only the launchers, but other things in the UI as well, Phil. TouchWiz on Samsung, Moto Blur on Motorola.
Are they still around?
Apparently. And Sense, as we know, on HTC, which is what gave me the willies and made me go looking for Nova.
Yeah.
Is that
what loads up default on the HTC range, Sense?
Sense has been HTC's user interface for a while, yeah.
Yeah, and it is. It's a bit cumbersome, isn't it?
Some things are okay, and some things I just did not like at all. So I've kept other parts of the Sense experience, but I've replaced the launcher, which is one big important part of it. So the launcher on a on an Android phone. It's essentially like Windows Explorer.exe. It's the bit that gives you the icons on the main screen and the main screen and all those sorts of things. So
desktop.
The desktop, exactly. That's the thing.
Some work better than others. The lightweight ones are pretty nice, and they just you can fly around
absolutely
really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best launchers, says Phil, are the ones that allow you to customize your experience or to how to use your phone. Certainly, in my experience, the launcher of choice for many of my friends, family, and colleagues is the Nova launcher that Dr. Ron and Andrew and Graham, by the way, mentioned. What I really love about it is the fact that it's out-of-the-box functional for anyone, but technically-minded users, it offers seemingly infinite number of functions that you can personalize and customize to your wants and needs. Changing launchers has been the early steps for many people I know for getting into the root and ROM experience without the risk of voiding the warranty, despite the fact that this is technically illegal under Australian consumer laws. With some devices... and without the risk of bricking your phone. Cue Graham explaining what bricking the phone means. Okay. Bricking
is that on the email?
That's what it says in
the
email.
Good. They're writing scripts for us.
Writing
now.
Our scripts for us. Bricking the phone, just since you've asked me to explain, is when you do something to your phone or something happens within your phone that turns it into something that has exactly the same functionality as a house brick.
Something you can throw, right?
Something and doesn't do anything else, so it doesn't work as a phone anymore.
Dear.
So, it's preference. Now, installing the launcher... Yeah,
tinkering when you're not quite sure what you're doing to a phone can result in bricking if you push the wrong button at the wrong time.
Now, what we've done to our HTC One XLs is we've installed a launcher. It's straight out of the Android market. We didn't need to root the phone. We didn't need to load a custom ROM. We've just changed the launcher and made the whole thing look and feel completely different, which is fantastic.
And it gives you the option. Do you want to set this as default, I think? And then once
does.
You do that, you're off and running.
You press the home. If you've got more than one launcher installed, you press the home button. It says, which launcher do you want to take you home? You choose the one. You press the button that says, don't ask me this again, and it uses that launcher from then on. Really simple. It's not that hard to find in the settings how to get back to the old launcher if you don't like the new one you've put on. And you can do all of that without the risk of bricking your phone, without the risk of voiding your warranty and any of that. But if you start to find that you like tinkering with your phone, then you can go reading the next step about loading custom ROMs and doing more intensive things. So that's the exciting bit. Yeah.
Try it on an old phone if you've got one in the junk box, and then try it on your current one.
That's a good way to go, particularly in Australia, if you know someone who's got an old HTC Desire, which were very, very popular phone. And in fact, everyone on the panel had one at one
stage
or other.
Yeah, except Lena, I think.
And go to... Oh, that's right. And go to roms-au. Is it roms-au.com?
Yeah, something like that.
Yep. Something like that. You'll find
Australian
ROMs.
Google
AU.
It. You'll find it.
And there's lots of different ROMs there to try in your HTC Desire. And particularly if that's not your primary phone anymore, it's a good way to get into tinkering with ROMs on Android phones. All so right. Thanks, Phil, for sending that in. That's wonderful.
Now, I'm just going to jump in here. Being now, as you know, I've changed flavours in phones recently.
Well, you've gone from the Android world because you had an HTC Desire, and you've gone to an iPhone 5.
I've gone to the iPhone, and my reasoning behind moving into that space was the fact that I have young kids, and the young kids on the iPhone can actually, you know, text me and FaceTime me and all that sort of stuff, which is really convenient. But having moved... That's not my story. Having moved into the other, to the dark side, to the light side, whatever you want to call it, I found the annoyances with the iPhone compared to the Android. And one of my big annoyances is the ability to go back through an application. Now, in the Android world, everything's built around stacks, which means that if you push a button in one application and go to another application and go to another application, the back button takes you back into the previous applications.
Yeah.
No such thing in the Apple world.
No, because the Apple devices don't have a back button.
They don't have a back button.
They have one button.
They do at the top in software, but it's only within that app. Once you're within that app, you can't go back to another. Like if you,
they don't have an operating system level back button or a hardware back button.
So, for example, if you open up your mail client and click a link in it, it takes you to a web browser, but you can't go back to the mail client. Anyway, that's my first observation. I just thought I'd share that with
Apple,
the listeners.
Of course, people who've been brought up on Apple and haven't used an Android device don't notice that limitation.
No, they don't.
So it's just one of those things of what you get used to.
Yeah. I must admit, I'm seriously thinking about Nexus 7 to have a bit of a tinker with one of those. I like being ambidextrous when it comes to technology.
Well,
especially
why not?
When you're in a role like we are here. It's good to have one on one hand and one on the other hand. An email from Phil, as in the tan type, Phil. Hi, Phil. Graham's commentary, Jelly Bean being split for phones and tablets, wasn't quite right. The best tablet experience you're likely to get on Android right now is 4.1 Jelly Bean. So your comment about splitting Android for phones and tablets was correct when Honeycomb came out, but no longer accurate. Nexus 7 is out of the box with Jelly Bean and selling roughly 1 million units per month. That's from Phil.
Phil is absolutely right. I got it wrong.
There you go. Well done. Thanks, Phil. Okay, table tennis, your turn.
From Emeka. You might remember Emeka last week.
Yeah, Emeka's been quite frequent of recent times and not in the chat tonight, I know.
Last week wrote in about problems with Telstra.
No. Who'd have a problem with Telstra?
Now, what happened last week was that he was complaining that he wasn't able to access an online meter to tell him how much his data usage had been.
That's right.
And he wasn't getting his SMS warnings either that he was supposed to get at 80%. So he went over his limit by some hundreds of dollars. And at the point where he wrote to us last week, he hadn't rung Telstra. So carrying on from that, hi guys, says Emeka. Just thought I should let you know how I went with Telstra after last week. I finally got around to ringing them and stating my case. To cut a long story short, after spending over half an hour on the phone explaining myself, going back and forth with the consultant, he asked how I wanted him to resolve the issue. I made myself clear that it was not my fault this happened again, and I wasn't willing to pay for any of it, so I would be happy if he completely waived the extra $398.35 off my account. He said he needed to speak to his manager, placed on hold for 15 minutes, and came back apologising for taking so long, and says he's looked into the account, and this seems to have happened time and again. Asked if he can see the notes about complaining previous times, and all they've done is meet me halfway. He says, yes, he can see all that's been happening, but the best he could do for me was credit $122.35 back to my account, and I'll have to pay the rest.
Oh, rubbish.
So again, they've met him halfway.
That's the standard thing.
Yeah, again, I explained there's no way I can afford to pay. This is not my fault. I went over by 1.3 gigabytes. It's their fault. They needed to deal with it. He ended up telling me it was either that or nothing. Do I take it or leave it? At this point, I had no options but to take it.
Oh.
So to this end, I spent an hour and 10 minutes on the phone with Telstra and got $122.35 credited out of $398.35 issue that was not in any way his fault.
Is he taking it to the TIO? Because that sounds very dodgy at face value. We don't know exactly all the ins and outs, but looking at it from what it is, it sounds like a job for the TIO if it's not his fault.
He ends the email saying, thing is, I've been keeping it quiet about it so long and paying all the extra charges. Now, I really think it's unfair to me and whoever else is having to constantly put up with this issue. Guys, what do you think? And I think you've already heard what Andrew says. Go to the TIO. Yeah. I think if you've tried to resolve it with Telstra...
Nah, TIO's the last point of call.
And Telstra have not made you happy, then the next step is the TIO.
And if it is blatantly their fault, there is no reason why they can't react accordingly.
Yep. So I think you've certainly got... It would certainly be something that I would encourage you to go and talk to the TIO about. Particularly, hopefully you've kept records about who you've spoken to and when you've spoken and all that sort of stuff. If you haven't, make sure that you do ring back and try again, speak to somebody. It is important, just as a general note, to do what Emeka has done. He's done the right thing. He's tried to resolve it directly with his carrier, in this case Telstra, first. And it's only if you can't reach an agreement with the carrier that you should then take it further to the TIO.
Yep, 1-800-062-058 is a free call from landlines. That's the TIO, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, 1-800-062-058. Or else there's an online form, which you can jump online and start lodging your complaint there. But Emeka, on your keyboard, my friend, I think start rattling a few cages thanks to the TIO, and hopefully something will resolve itself. Maybe before
definitely
Christmas.
An export of call. Yep. And please let us know how you go.
Absolutely.
Even if we're not on air, so we can tweet about it or write about it in the newsletter or something.
Big Cole wrote to us. He said, "Hi guys and gal. We'll miss being able to listen to a sensible, informative, Australian-based tech content. Yeah, wow.
To be fair, we've had a lot of emails in the last little while saying similar things to that, and we appreciate them all. Thank you.
Yep. I just chose this one out because it came through recently. I cannot believe that this quality show like yours is not being backed by business and media money.
Neither can I.
No, it's state of the economy, I think, in respect to all sorts of traditional media. And like in my professional world, and I'm involved in broadcast television, there's a massive change underway at the moment, and where a lot of corporate sponsors and people are putting their money is determined by their best return on their investment, and they're finding that the traditional media is not it. And like all good things in business, they take a bit of time to come across. So who knows what might happen down the track.
If you work for a large telecommunications company or something similar,
funny you should mention that.
Talk to your marketing company and give us a buzz.
I got an email from Optus today, but anyway, really? That's another story. Yeah. So he finishes up by saying, "What's your favourite tech podcast that you listen to on a regular basis?" I don't really listen to a tech podcast. I listen to science podcasts. I like Dr. Yes. Carl.
Oh, I'm the same. I listen to science podcasts. I listen to the ABC Science Show.
Which listen to us. We're a good tech podcast. 2 hours of us a week. Oh, sorry. the podcast 2 hours, isn't it? Yeah,
that's enough. Hour and 40 or an hour and there 50 minutes usually. Yeah.
Round it up.
Yeah, I listen to science podcasts as well. I listen to the Science Show on the ABC Radio National or by podcast.
Yeah.
And I listen to Quirks and Quarks off CBC Radio in Canada, which I find another good science show.
What's that
show.
About?
It's general science.
Okay.
Which is fascinating to hear another point of view from the Canadian market. So they're the two sciencey ones I listen to.
Yeah, cool.
Yep. So they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like Dr. Carl. He's great.
Dr. Carl's good.
He brings order to chaos. Sorry, order from chaos is what I'm trying to say. Some of the stuff he talks about, you go, wow, I never thought of it that way. That's good.
Although I did last week with Android versions, every now and then he says something that just isn't quite right. So
we all do that.
You just got to take some things with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Speaking, he does have a very, very wide-ranging knowledge, so I won't condemn him too much for getting the odd thing wrong.
Okay.
Next one, who is this? Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Ping up post or was something like that. hello, guys. If you ask me about the NBN, most of the opposition are in denial about how good the NBN is.
Are we talking politics now, are we?
And how wireless services simply would not cut it.
Yeah, correct.
They are only in denial because they are in opposition and the government is doing something positive for the country.
It's a river in Egypt, isn't it?
If keeping the NBN would be the only way for them to form government, they would be singing its praises. Regards, Paul. I agree.
Yeah, look, we've been staunch advocates of high-speed communications in this country. We need it to get a bit of an edge over the rest of the world. And
forget getting an edge over, keeping up with.
Yeah, that too.
Half of Europe's got fibre networks going in. We're competing against countries in Asia like Korea that have got superb broadband through the country.
Yeah.
If we want to be able to survive in the modern world, we need to be able to get digital content in and out of our country and in and out of our businesses and in and out of our homes so that we can do our work.
Yes, we do.
And this is the way to do it.
And It's interesting. I was reading during the course of the week that Netflix, which is the video on demand service based in the United States, designed for the US continent, that service in prime time hours, which I'm assuming is sort of like between 6 and midnight over their local time, Netflix manages to rack up or account for a third of America's broadband data usage around that time. Now, if nothing else...
Knowing somebody in the US who uses Netflix... To a large degree, this doesn't surprise me.
But is this not the where it's all going to? Pulling your content.
No, this is exactly where it's all going to.
As you want. And this is why we need the NBN so much in this country, so that you and I, who live in the cities, can be just as... we get the same quality, the same content as someone living a long way out of a major city centre in this country.
And look, another way to think about the NBN is to think about building the rail networks in the 19th century... to move goods around the country, or to think about building the telephone network in the 20th century to move information around the country by telephone. This is a project on that same level of national importance. This is essential to have this infrastructure, one way or another, to be able to move into the future. And if we don't get it right, like if it gets completely stuffed up, like they stuffed up the rollout of pay television in Australia, where they had crews chasing each other down the same streets, laying parallel cables. They had Optus crew and a Telstra crew laying...
they dug up my nature strip to put a big pit in there.
Laying the same cable, the same technology...
Which is now obsolete.
Down the same street, both of which are now obsolete. And the absolute waste of resources that was, you know, this... To get this rollout of fibre right, so that we have one fibre network instead of having multiple redundant fibres going to the same places, which is stupid, and to have it properly designed, or at least halfway reasonably designed, even if there's some people that have issues with the way it's designed, this is going to serve the country for the next 100 years. The way the telephone network served it for the last 100 years.
Correct. We need it. It'll happen. It'll be good.
Written, spoken, and authorised by Graham Kelly.
Absolutely. Are you affiliated with any particular party, or is it the...
Graham Callaghan Common Sense Party.
I like that one. An email from Michael Holzinger. Hello, Michael. He goes on to say what a lot of people have been saying, how they're going to miss the show. Thank you very much for that. He said, I'm not a social networking person and I don't use Twitter or Facebook, so how do I find out when you post an eagerly awaited new ad hoc podcast? Well, yes, we'll certainly be letting everybody know via those social networking feeds, but also the best way is to subscribe to Dr. Ron's newsletter, because that will still be going. So,
or just make sure that your podcast client stays subscribed to the Tech Talk Radio feed, because...
That's the other way.
Yeah.
But the podcast is after the event. If you want to participate in the ad hoc broadcast, like the guys do in the chat...
Yep, so on the stream and in the chat room, yeah.
Then make sure you subscribe to the newsletter is probably the best way, if you're not involved in the social networking side of things.
Yep. And the newsletter will still have, hopefully, interesting little technical and technological tidbits in it that, you know, you probably will be looking for... especially since we won't be on the air to sell them.
Michael worked for a government department, which I won't name.
Right.
He said, this is a PS on his email. He said he works for a government department, a wonderful government institution which still uses IE6, but have seen the light, so he's leaving. Well done, Michael. So there you go. Have you got another one, or is that it for our selected...
That's my pile.
Excellent. So. That's six. Yes, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, everybody, for sending in your correspondence. If you want to participate in our few remaining shows, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft had a bit of a release the other day. We've spoken about it last week. Windows 8.
Yes.
And Surface thingies, tablets. Just yes. Another one to add to the collection. So everyone's got one now. Microsoft's got theirs. Apple's have got theirs. And, of course, we've got all the Google devices, which are starting to pop out now on the Android system.
Yes.
Have you seen any in the wild yet, Graham? Or has it been one of those things where you'd have to go into a shop, a big yellow shop or one of those... hardly normal shops or something like that to see a Surface device. Yeah, I haven't seen any.
Haven't seen one, but heard a couple of interesting reports. I had one customer who actually had a visit from some people from Microsoft who were showing off their new tablet.
Oh, really? They wanted to try and flog it to him?
Something like that, yeah.
And they came around and did door-to-door salespeople?
Apparently.
Oh, wow, that's good for Microsoft.
So, not quite sure what that was all about, but that was interesting. So, they were pushing it to certain kinds of organisations. I probably wouldn't be appropriate to reveal the nature of my customer.
I wouldn't do that either, but I would have been thinking that it's... Windows 8 seems to be tailored for the personal market at the moment, just from the... I built a Windows 8 device during the course of the week.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
Oh, it was swimmingly.
Yeah.
It just worked. It came up. I built it on a fresh install, so you didn't need anything like the old device to actually load it up on.
Good, good.
It was an old little HP little box that I had there with a brand new drive in it. So it built very quickly, and then it came up on the
what was previously known as Metro, and I turned it off.
Oh, okay.
I said, there you go, done that.
Did you
there.
Figure out how to turn it off?
Yes, yes.
How long did that take you?
No, it wasn't too bad. Someone sent me an email
who is
not here,
you in.
Who is not in the studio tonight. Said, just remember the top right-hand corner. And anyway, I found the start.
Bring out the charm.
The start thing's on the right-hand side on the thingy-bob. Yeah, yep. Over the right there now. But anyway, down the bottom there. Yeah, is that what they're called? Charms.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. So anyway, I did build a Windows 8 device. So now I'm going to try and find some time to run some things on it and see how it goes before I pass judgment on said device. But I don't have a tablet. I'm just running it up on a normal thing. And you can get into the Windows relatively easy. Can you default it so that it comes up in that rather than the
to the desktop instead of in Metro?
Metro?
Yeah. No, you cannot.
Oh, they're good.
Because otherwise everyone would, and no one would learn how to use Metro.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And yeah, one other person I spoke to who was just an individual, an employee at one of my customers, said that she'd won a copy in some competition.
Of what, Windows?
Of Windows 8, yeah.
Wow, they're giving it away now.
Someone was.
Oh, good.
So she'd installed it as well, and she said she loved it. So
good.
Clearly
good.
Clinically insane, but that's
all
right.
Well, no, some people have. Some people have to.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's been very interesting to see how this all plays out.
Adam Turner, our regular correspondent from the other side of town, has been lodging views from his couch.
Yes.
For many, many years now on this radio program. His third last one is this one, which is about Windows 8 and the tablet and Microsoft strategy.
Turner's View from the Couch.
So this week I've taken the view from the couch on the road again, and I'm having coffee with Scott Sheedy, who is the founder of Australian Microsoft focused blog WP Down Under, and we're sitting here playing with his new Surface tablet. Sheed's, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. You want to tell us a little bit about the tablet and what you think of Microsoft's strategy here? We've got Windows Phone 8, we've got Windows 8 on desktops, on tablets. Where's it all going to go, and how do you think it stands up against the kind of things we're seeing from Apple and Android?
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me. I guess, from my perspective, the Surface tablet for a Generation 1 device and for Microsoft's first real foray into hardware since the Zune HD, it's a very well-executed device. I think the hardware's top-notch. I think it will capture a lot of attention in the way that they've designed and developed the hardware. And I think Windows 8 is an interesting and exciting new OS for Microsoft. It's got some areas it needs to flesh out a little bit and work a little bit on, but I think it's certainly tailored beautifully to touch and to swipe gestures, and particularly for tablet devices and also the touch screens and the all-in-ones that are in the market on the desktop side.
Now, I've got an iPad mini in my bag, and I did offer to swap with you and you turned me down. Why? What do you think? If I'm sitting here going, oh, why would I want one of them? I've got an iPad, and trust me, you hear that a lot. What do you think is the appeal of this as opposed to something like an iPad?
Well, I think you can look at it two ways. There's obviously the ecosystem view. Microsoft make devices to suit and complement the Microsoft ecosystem in the same way that Apple do it. They want to lock you into their ecosystem or to attract you to their ecosystem. So that's the sort of holistic view. It links beautifully to your Xbox Music Pass across your devices, whether it's Xbox at home, your PC, your phone, or now your tablet. It has smart glass to add additional functionality and benefits within the ecosystem. But I think from looking purely as a tablet device around what do you want from a tablet, its biggest win is it offers Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
So it's a consumption-based device in the same way that the iPad is, with naturally a much smaller ecosystem for apps because it's a new device and it's a new platform. So you're talking 6,000 to 10,000 apps in the marketplace at launch, which, mind you, was more than Apple had at the launch of iPad 1. But it has more than just consumption. You can create content with it. You've got Word, PowerPoint, Excel, Notepad from the old desktop, and OneNote within the Office suite.
Now, that's one of the things that impressed me is when I heard you could run Office RT on it, I thought that it would be Office, just single window Office in the Metro interface. And I hate those single window apps, whether it be on Windows, Mac, or whatever. They really frustrate me. But you can actually, even on a Windows RT tablet like the Surface, you can go to the traditional desktop and run Word on it and have three desk and three windows open at once. Do you think that's part of the productivity boost? Because as soon as I saw that, I thought, yeah, this would be a lot more useful than what I first thought it might be.
Yeah, I don't think Microsoft had any choice. They had to execute it in a way that made Word and Office familiar.
Yeah.
And locking you down to a Windows 8 store type app, which has one window, by and by in one large resolution, unless you side snap it, it wouldn't have worked. So importantly, you've touched on the fact that the Windows RT operating system and the Surface RT, it doesn't support legacy applications from Windows 7, Vista, XP. So you can't run a Photoshop, you can't run Quicken, you can't run your old games. But what they've cleverly done is, even though they've locked it down so the desktop can't run all those apps, Office launches from the desktop. So Microsoft naturally are able to bypass that lockdown, yeah, and work within their own system, and they've executed Office in a very functional way.
Yeah. Now, the Surface is running on an ARM processor, but the Surface Pro is going to run on Intel. So because it's on an ARM processor, you don't quite have the same flexibility to just install whatever you want and sideload apps on it and do the kind of things that you might, the kind of hacks that you might try and come up with on an Intel device.
Absolutely. If someone is looking for a laptop or a netbook replacement or a desktop on the go, then Windows 8 Pro or the Windows Surface Pro device that will come out in January are what you need to be looking at.
Yeah.
People that buy into the RT version of the operating system or the Surface RT that's out now, expecting to have a desktop replacement, they're going to be disappointed because they haven't looked into what the product delivers. And it is, by and large, a consumption device with some create content capability through Office to exploit the advantages of the Microsoft ecosystem. So, yeah, definitely my advice to them would be weigh up what you want the device for and look at getting one of the other OEM tablets on the market running Windows 8 Pro, or get a Surface Pro when they come out sometime after January.
So it's kind of the difference, like, you wouldn't, if you bought an iPad expecting it to be a little Mac, you'd be disappointed because it's not a little Mac. It doesn't do
correct.
All
it's
the
not
things
running OS X.
Yeah.
It's
so this
iOS.
Is the same kind of thing. If you buy the Surface rather than the Surface Pro, thinking, oh, it's just a nice little computer, it might not be what you're hoping for.
That's right. It's essentially it's a beautifully designed piece of hardware with a modified version of Office. It should suit 90% of people's needs. And it is a entry ticket into the new Windows Store app ecosystem that Microsoft are bringing.
So then you've got all kinds of touchscreen games and stuff like that. Now, I've been playing things like Fruit Ninja and Angry Birds on it because that's the kind of productivity tools that I look for in a mobile device.
Yeah.
Is that going to give me a bit of an integrated ecosystem in that I can play Fruit Ninja on my touchscreen Windows 8 computer, on my tablet, on my Windows 8 smartphone, and have it all linked together in a way that I wouldn't get from the other ecosystems?
Certainly, the three screen strategy that Microsoft have is around converging some of that functionality across multiple devices. A lot of that's going to come down to the developers. So when the developers develop, whilst there's shared APIs and a shared code base for Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, developers will still be able to have separate apps where you buy an app for the Windows Phone device or you buy an app for the Windows 8 desktop or tablet. But they may also be able to offer one app for both or one price purchase for both apps. And there is functionality already where you can actually open a game on your desktop, play a game, pause it, and then resume and pick up running that game on your desktop, on your tablet on the go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there will be that capability to play games across devices, and we'll see more and more of that as developers get into the ecosystem.
So the way I see it, I think that the Windows 8 tablets and smartphones are kind of reliant on Windows 8 on the desktop taking off and gaining acceptance, because once people get used to the modern UI on the desktop, they're more likely to be prepared to embrace it on a phone or a tablet. Do you think it's going to work that way, or do you think it might be the other way around, that people see it on smartphones and tablets and then go for the desktop? How do you see that sort of in the Apple world? I think they call it the halo effect. If you liked an iPod, you liked it so much you went out and bought a Mac, sort of thing.
Well, Microsoft now have skin in the game in that front, in that they do have that consistent visual and design element across the devices, and they have this shared code across the platforms. the reality is that the 2 years to date that Windows Phone, just over 2 years that Windows Phone's been out, it's only taken 4 or 5% of the market in Australia and just under that globally. So purely and simply, Windows Phone has not been a commercial success.
Yeah.
So you would have to say that with Windows being the single largest operating system in the world, used by more people than any other operating system by a long stretch, that Microsoft are pinning their hopes on people becoming used to the new UI and the new styling and then seeing the benefit of adding into the ecosystem with more devices.
Yeah.
And I think Windows 8 is the ticket to the game for them for that in that regard, because what they had 4 million downloads of Windows 8 in the first 3 days, which was faster than the take-up of Mountain Lion. And if you think about the all the touch devices coming, touch monitors, touch all-in-ones, touch notebooks, touch combination devices, I think once those start hitting the market and people start taking those, it's a logical choice for them to jump into the phone ecosystem. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out over the next year or so. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Adam.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, live from a windstorm near you. That was Adam Turner. Thanks, Adam, for all the views from the couch over the years. I'm sure we'll get to say that again coming up to our little shindig that we've got coming up on the 3rd of December, which will be our last show in the current format. So, anyway, yes, Windows 8, Phone 8, interesting ecosystem. Whether it all pulls together in the way that everyone envisages is yet to be seen, but early days, early days. Got to bang the rocks together, guys, as I think Arthur Dent said. Anyway, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Actually, it was the announcer on the radio that said it.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are living at the moment if you'd like to come and participate with the show in real time. A couple of interesting news articles that went past the my desktop during the course of today. Google was ordered to pay damages over an underworld link. Now, this came to surface today where the search giant has been ordered to pay a man $200,000 in damages for wrongly linking him to the Melbourne's underworld. You know, all those people that you've seen programs on, otherwise known as Underbelly. Michael, and please forgive me if I can't pronounce this name correctly, because you know how I'm terrible.
I wasn't even game to try.
Were you? I think it's Trulja, T-R-K-U-L-J-A. Anyway, Michael came to Australia from Yugoslavia in 1960s and is the eldest of a, he's part of the Serbian community in Melbourne's southeastern suburbs. Anyway, in 2004... he came to grief in a street in Melbourne, and the crime was never solved. But anyway, the Victorian Supreme Court heard when he entered in when his name was entered into search engines, and he was linked to Melbourne's underworld. Poor man. So someone in Google's land had turned him around from being a victim into a what's the word a crook into a victim.
Well, the only problem with this is that Google didn't do it. Google don't generally write articles about people who, have come
That's
to
true.
Melbourne and done things like that. Google don't create that sort of content. All Google do is index content.
They do.
So what's happened here is that Google, somebody's written this stuff on the web. Google have indexed it like they indexed the entire web. And so it shows up in Google search results. This guy, or this has gone after Google instead of going after the original publisher of the material, because Australian law is a little bit messed up in this regard.
And just a tad.
And just gets it what I would say that it's a case where Australian law just gets it completely wrong. And they've gone after Google. They've asked Google to not publish it in the search results, which again is going after the wrong target. You should go after the original author. Google have not complied with that, and they've taken Google to court, and they've won. Now, this is like if someone wrote a book defaming Graham Callaghan, and it was in the National Library or the State Library.
Well, what point it got indexed.
And this would be like suing the library for not taking the index card out of the card catalogue.
Oh, well.
That's exactly what this is.
I agree with you.
So,
all right.
Most unfortunate. $200,000 they won.
They'll appeal it. I'm sure.
I hope so. And I hope, because there's a couple of precedents in Australia, I understand, where this sort of stuff has gone through. And I hope they do take it up to the highest possible court to clear this up and perhaps set a better precedent.
Well, Justice Beach described Google as being like the news agent that sells a newspaper.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe he was looking at it as if the newspaper contains a defamatory article. So yeah, they really should go after the person who published the newspaper, not the poor guy selling it on the street corner.
Correct.
So yeah, this was in the Victorian Supreme Court that this all went on. So I presume that they do have higher courts they can appeal to. If they can get leave to do so, and if they've got grounds on which to do so. So it'll be interesting to see if anything happens to follow up on this.
There's been a growing concern about the internet power grab. You know how we have the ITU, which is the International Telecommunications Union, which is an organisation set up to look after telecommunications companies around the world, so that we can ring America, American can ring us, or wherever, and it just connects. And there's rules and regulations,
and they set standards and keep things like radio band plans so that they're compatible across borders and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, creates the rules on how the telephony works.
Yep.
Now there are fears regulatory changes might stifle free speech or make users pay for extra things on the internet now, like Skype or email. They're trying to get an organisation together to sort of monitor, like the ITU does for telephones. They're trying to get something together. When I say they, a lot of countries around the world are banding together to try and get one body which sort of looks after the internet. And it's creating a bit of a ruckus where free speech could be under threat, all those sort of things. And interestingly enough, those behind it are those that traditionally don't like free speech. Certain large Asian countries come to mind. They're instigators behind it.
So they might be wanting to set rules that allow them to be quite restrictive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, Paul Twomey, do you remember him?
No, who's Paul Twomey?
Paul Twomey used to be the chief executive of ICANN, which is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. So, in other words, a non-profit organisation that looked after GrahamCalligan.com, you know, and all those sort of internet names and things like that. Paul Twomey, he had this to say about the latest developments.
International ISPs and others will have to really change the way they do their business, which makes the network work less efficiently and less fluidly and openly. To try to basically get a change in international law that suits what they want to do both internationally and, more importantly, domestically, to control how the internet is used.
So
how do we avoid this happening? Do we need to make sure that this body, whatever it is, ends up with less representatives from China and more representatives from
open free speech market countries?
Well, that lets the US out, and probably lets Australia out as well.
Well, Conroy had this to say.
We don't believe the existing system needs any significant or radical change. We don't believe a case has been made at all.
So, you know, from his point of view, nothing's going to change from an Australian government point of view. But the ITC is fighting back in an online opinion piece. The International Telecommunications Union Secretary said that the UN can create an accessibly globally connected world. So maybe through the UN we will see some form of common sense out of this grab for trying to curtail the internet. They've tried before and failed. Can't see it's going to be happening anytime soon, just
well,
for me personally.
Hopefully, if anybody does get set up, that its core goals and aims will be to maintain internet freedoms rather than to curtail them.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was flippant a minute ago about the US being possibly not suitable, but in fact, internet freedom is a big thing in America. So, maybe there are some wiser heads out there that can make sure that this does not turn into a disaster.
Here's hoping, Mr. Conroy. Speaking of
the internet, yes.
As you mentioned in the news, Graham.
Oh, yes.
The ISP filtering regime that he waved about at the last federal election.
The one that we here on Tech Talk Radio have been saying is an absolute terrible idea for the last...
That's right.
What, 5 years now we've been saying it?
Yeah, well, I think it's been... The approach by the government has been officially curtailed now, and Mr. Conroy said instead of internet service providers... being directed by the government and the Australian Federal Police to block sites. They're going to use Interpol and all those sort of things. Now, we're starting to see this. Telstra, remember also...
Well, Telstra and Optus have been doing this for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Telstra got sprung bad on their mobile broadband. I think it must have been a couple of months back.
Well, that was a different thing. This was about June or July this year. And that's really a different thing. What Telstra were doing was they were trying to build an opt-in... service to be able to screen a lot more than just refuse classification material. They were wanting to screen all kinds of what's laughingly called objectionable material to try and allow parents to control what their kids can see on their phones and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the way they did it was to start sending a record of everybody's web activity to a company overseas.
Yeah, well, it's back.
And they got sprung for doing that. And
yeah,
all
they didn't tell their customers.
Concerns. They didn't tell their customers about
yeah.
it. They've brought it back. They've said that now it's going to be completely opt-in and only the data for those customers that have chosen to take the service up will be sent to this database and used to categorise websites into the categories that you might want to... Well, yeah, Queensland Rail style, if you're listening to the show a few weeks ago, to be able to say
yes.
that you don't want... your order to say that you only want educational sites to be available or you don't want gambling or sex-related sites to display or whatever. So that's the sort of service that Telstra are offering for next... or about to launch for next year customers. They're actually asking for public comment on their blog at the moment.
And
so.
It's an opt-in thing now as opposed to a stealth thing.
Yeah, well, the product itself was always supposed to be opt-in, but the bit they forgot was they actually sent everybody's data to try and start building up their database to start categorising sites, and that turned out to be a bit of a mistake.
Yes, yes.
So,
and an embarrassing mistake, too.
They admitted that it was a mistake, and they've redesigned their product accordingly, they say. So that's interesting. But the bit about Stephen Conroy, to get back to that, that was about the internet filter, where originally, several years ago, the Rudd government back then proposed an internet filter that was going to block any material that was refused classification, that couldn't be classified as... under the Australian classification system of, you know, G, PG...
Which at the time was inadequate.
X. And anything that didn't fit into one of the existing categories was refused classification. It's illegal import and can't be brought in. The problem is that Australia's rules are different to everybody else's in the world, so a lot of perfectly ordinary, you know, porn sites that might be... you might have expected to be in the X category or the R category wouldn't have got... wouldn't have been classifiable under those and would have got refused classification, would have blocked an awful lot of the internet. It was also seen as technically the wrong way to go, to be a big, far too broad-ranging, far too complex, far too obscure. There was no proper checks and balances in the way things got on and off the list, so that, for example, there was an example of I think it was a Queensland dentist, wasn't it?
That's
whose
right.
website accidentally got on the list got on the list because he got hacked.
Yeah.
And there's no way for him to find out that he's on the list other than to suddenly
people
realize
going, hey,
that,
we can't access your website.
Exactly right. And no way for him to appeal or get off the list. So, big problems like that. Basically, the whole IT industry tried to tell the government it was a bad idea. Conroy trying to save face, or the government trying to save face, set up an inquiry with the Law Reform Commission.
It's going
this
back
was
a ways.
Going back in 2010, I think it was that was set up. And they came back and said, well, look, refuse classification is a bit of a black hole and a bit nebulous and not really appropriate. What you should do is set up a new category of really, really objectionable material and just filter that. So to make something that's not as broad-ranging as just doesn't fit the existing categories, but, is something where there's defined as to what's wrong with it.
Well, I think common sense has prevailed here because getting back to what Conroy... Well, the reason why Stephen Conroy has decided to not forge ahead with his mandatory list is because the blacklist, which is what Interpol provide a lot of the ISPs, he said in a statement...
Which is the blacklist that Telstra and Optus already use and have been for a couple of years now.
He said that ISPs have been issued notices requiring them to block these illegal sites in accordance with their obligations under the Act. Now, the Australian Federal Police have now begun issuing similar notices to small ISPs and will work closely with them in helping them meet their obligations under the Australian law as well. So rather than the government running it through their political means, we're seeing common sense through a policing means, which is an international policing effort.
That's exactly right.
And that's what's now going to drive this filtering in the big ISPs.
And it's a much better solution, and it removes... It arm's length the government a bit from having to be in control of this list, although I presume that Australian police forces can have some input through Interpol on what goes onto the onto their list, which is it's a list known as the worst of list at Interpol. Contains about 1,400 sites of the very worst images of child abuse and things like that. So, really stuff that there's absolutely indefensible under any circumstances.
Yes.
So, I think it's perfectly appropriate to be blocking that.
And I think a lot of people's attitude in society these days is very much against this sort of thing. And if you look at what's happened literally a few hours ago as we went to air tonight, the federal government has released a royal commission into this sort of behaviour by all sorts of organisations.
Well, into institutional child abuse, yet to see as we go to air... exactly what their terms of reference are going to be, but certainly...
I think it's a step in the right direction.
I think it is, yeah.
And I think it's all in the good thing. Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Twitter. Twitter news. We have Twitter news. And a few other interesting things, too, about the SMS things for bank transactions. I thought that was quite interesting, too. Anyway, back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Confirmed new iPad mini to debut in October.
That sounds a bit winfo.
Yes, this is good news. You shouldn't be able to patent things that are either obvious or natural progressions from things that already exist.
Maybe it can loop through.
The red is Office, the green is Xbox.
It's going to make life harder rather than easier.
Well, now you've railroaded me.
Sorry.
On its face.
Whoa. Oh. Whoa.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Graham Callaghan and I are running the ship this evening. The other vagabonds are off gallivanting around wherever they are.
Yeah, well, one of them's having fun overseas in Tasmania.
Oh, that's a bit harsh. I'm going there for my Christmas holidays. Thank you very much.
Actually, it's lovely down there.
I'm looking forward to it.
That whole area down there near Launceston and the Tamar Valley.
Yeah, apparently the ice cream's pretty good.
Yeah, so I hear.
So I've seen a lot of Twitter. Dr. Ron's out there eating ice cream as he's travelling Tasmania. Anyway, who knows who'll be in next week? We'll wait and see.
It's a lucky dip at the moment.
It is indeed. Twitter is, obviously we all know about Twitter. A couple of things that happened during the course of the week. Do you know what a copyrighted tweet is?
No,
neither did I. But anyway, microblogging service Twitter has modified its policy for responding to copyright complaints under the United States Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which is that DMCA thing that we see from time to time pop up in certain areas. Anyway, from now on, the firm will no longer delete tweets without explanation, but insist replace them with a notice saying that they've been withdrawn after complaints from rights holders. I'm still trying to work out what a copyrighted tweet is. I'm not sure. Anyway, Twitter will respond to reports of allegedly copyright infringement, such as allegations concerning the unauthorized use of copyrighted images. Maybe that's what it is, pointing to tweets, which is a picture you don't own.
Yeah, I assume that's what they mean, that the content of the tweet is copyright by someone else other than the person who tweeted it. Yeah.
Yeah. How that's going to affect retweeting and stuff like that's going to be interesting too. But anyway, yes, photos... Background allegations concerning unauthorized use of copyrighted images uploaded through the photo hosting services and the likes, I guess, is what they're targeting. That's what a copyrighted tweet is. So, there you go. people claiming their own and it's not theirs, I guess. Now, in other news for Twitter this week, they had a password reset, which caused a bit of a shenanigans during the course of. A bit of a panic after a lot of account passwords were reset automatically. Notifications were sent out. Whoops! Many users and several media outlets jumped to the conclusion that Twitter had been hacked, but it wasn't the case. So, anyway, Twitter said, sorry, guys, it was us. We pushed the wrong button. We actually did it by mistake. So, and the blog explained that by resetting passwords and sending out emails to users who had their accounts, yes, they apologized. They said sorry.
It would have looked like someone was trying to hack the account, wouldn't it? That's what I would assume if I got a password reset email and I hadn't requested it myself. I would have assumed someone else was trying to hack the account.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of... one particular high-profile person that got hacked recently through his Apple identity and things like that. So paranoia is probably reigning fairly heavily out there in the Twitter world. Online world, in fact.
Speaking of identity theft and hacking accounts and so on, the story about the industry body that says that SMSs are not safe to be...
Yeah, what's going on there?
Not safe to use for bank security.
Yeah. Now,
that's a fascinating story.
You mentioned this in the news. This was about a lobby group for Australian telcos that said that, no, SMS technology should not be considered safe for identification.
Well, I did some digging
banking
into
transaction.
This.
Yeah? What'd you find?
Okay. Well, apparently what goes on is that the banks, what they're doing is when you do a transaction, say you transfer money to somebody that you haven't transferred money to before, or if you transfer a large sum of money, larger than normal, what a lot of banks will do is they'll send you a text message with a code in it, and you have to key that code in. And that proves that you're the account holder because it's to your phone. And presumably, if you've got your phone, then you are you.
Now they call it second-level authentication, don't they?
Yeah. Now, for business customers and for a lot of and some other customers, they have these little tokens that have a number that changes every couple of minutes.
Yep.
And you key that number in.
I had one of those. Had being the word.
Okay. I've still got one of those.
Have you?
But for a lot of personal accounts, they use SMS. Now, apparently what's been happening is that people have been getting access to the banking site through other means, however they're getting access to the login information for the online banking. And then in order to get this second level authentication, what the bad guys are doing is they're ringing up people's telephone providers and porting the phone number to a different device that the hacker has control over. So just like if you moved from, say, Telstra to Optus, you can take your phone number with you. That's called number porting.
Yep.
So you can keep the same number. Well, what they're doing is they're moving you from... you know, Telstra to Optus, or from Vodafone to Optus, or to Optus to Vodafone, or something like that.
Whichever way, yeah.
Whichever way, to onto a phone that the hacker owns, and thereby getting control of your phone account, and then the text message goes to the hacker instead of to the account holder.
Nice.
Which is clever in an unfortunate sort of way.
I think your average crook's not going to be able to cotton onto this, but the high-tech crooks, ooh.
Well, yeah. The interesting thing is how easy it is to get the number porting part to happen. Apparently, all that the average phone company needs to allow this number porting to go on is the mobile phone number itself, and either the account number, like the number on the bill that they send you, or the date of birth of the account holder, which quite often is a matter of public record.
Indeed. And normally it's the first port of call if you ring someone.
Certainly on a lot of people's Facebook pages and so on.
Well, yeah, but also if you ring a telco, they ask you, oh, what's your date of birth and
exactly.
your account number and all that. Now, who's not to say that that account holder, that telco person on the other end isn't up to something else in another life?
Well, this is the problem. But, they don't even need to be a telco or working for a telco to get hold of this information. They can look it up on on your profile on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook or anything like that. The information's often out there for people. I mean, people's birthdays are common knowledge amongst their in-group and even on the web. So it's not a huge security hurdle to clear. So this number porting can be done quite easily without the account holder's permission. And it turns out that the phone companies, as represented by their lobby group that issued this warning, initially had agreed to tighten security to make it harder to port a telephone number without having decent identification, and then backed down on it, saying that they didn't want to make it look like they were trying to lock customers in or be obstructionist to number porting, so or to be anti-competitive. So, which I think is a bit rich coming from telephone companies whose main business model seems to be to lock people in, but never mind.
Send them to the TIO.
So instead of saying that they're going to secure number porting so your number can't be ported away, what they've instead said to the banks is don't use SMS for security reasons.
Yeah.
So just beware, if you do have SMS set up as the second level security on your bank account, two things you can do. One is go to your phone company and demand that they put on extra security questions on your account that have to be answered before your number can be ported away.
That's a good idea. I'm sure they'd do that for you.
Apparently they will, or some of them will. The other thing you can do is go to your bank and say that, no, I don't want to use SMS as my second level authentication. Give me a token.
Yep.
One of these
physical. And depending upon which technology, which bank you're using and all that sort of stuff, you might win.
You get one of these RSA tokens or something like that. So they're the two things you can do to reduce your susceptibility to this particular threat. But it's an interesting one, and interesting that interesting response from the phone companies, I thought.
Yes, or lack thereof.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of telephone calls.
Yeah.
If you picked up the phone in an emergency and you needed to ring 000.
Yeah.
How would you feel if you got a recorded message saying that the number you have called is not available from your service?
Depend what sort of service I was ringing from. I'd probably feel a little bit panicked if I needed 000.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, TPG.
Oh, here we go.
An ISP here in Australia who is traditionally, I don't know, how's the word to describe them? They do push their friendship with a lot of customers and authority figures.
TPG provides some of the lowest cost ADSL plans in the Australian marketplace. And all I can say is that sometimes you get what you pay for.
Yeah, well, apparently a 000 call for service on your VoIP number is not one of those either. Anyway, the Australian Communications and Media Authority are taking these guys to court, alleging the provider failed to give certain customers access to 000. Now, ACMA says that the failures took place over a six-month period between March and September of last year. Now, to right, under legislation, every phone service in Australia must be able to ring the 000 service if you need it in an emergency. So anyway, they're off to court to sort of do whatever you do in front of court, and TPG basically said, oh, we haven't got anything to say on the matter, we'll get back to you through our lawyers. Really? That's not satisfactory, I would have thought, in today's modern day communications.
I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah. Anyway,
find out what the court has to say about it.
Just a bit of a back catalogue on TPG. They've been in trouble quite frequently recently, with the last episode being a $132,000 fine for misleading advertising.
Unlimited plans that have limits.
Yeah, and that was back, when was that? Oh, I can't remember. That wasn't too far back. And also, they had a $2 million fine recently from the federal court after the ACCC took action against the company for running misleading TV ads and press ads, of course, as well. So they've had a few run-ins with authorities. Is this telling you something, guys? Think about it. Think about it. You can pick the devil you know or the devil you don't know. So, anyway, good luck if you're looking to change ISPs at the moment. Take that on board.
Internode provide a very good service.
Oh, look, there's a lot of fantastic ISPs out there. I'm with iiNet, have been for some time.
iiNet also. Well, iiNet and Internode are a bit more tangled up now than they used to be. Yeah.
They are indeed. Speaking of internet, just because we can, you remember when... Let's go back a few years and you had VHS at home and broadcast television, and broadcast TV was better quality than VHS. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it turned the corner where your home video becomes better quality than what the broadcasters are running to air.
Yeah, yep.
It's the same with internet now, I'm finding, that my home internet, my fixed line internet, is now no longer faster than my wireless internet thanks to LTE.
Depends on which part of the country you stand.
Well, absolutely. In the office at the moment, I'm getting 58, 60 megabits down, and it's fantastic. I'm going, why can't I get this at home?
Your office just happens to be within range of the Melbourne CBD 4G area for Telstra. All I can say to you is that if everybody had mobile phones working at that speed, then no one would have mobile phones working at that speed, if you follow my reasoning.
Yeah, you're meaning that we need the capacity, because it does vary quite a bit, and during the hours of the day. Like, I find that the coffee run in the morning down the street, I get the fastest internet speeds when I do a speed test. But if you go in the afternoon, when the kiddies are out from school and everyone's online or whatever it is like that, things take a severe dive speed-wise.
Yeah, and you'll find that as the network becomes better subscribed and more people move to 4G, that the average speeds, the actual practical speeds, will go down because more people will be sharing that same bandwidth.
Great at 2 in the morning when you're doing your torrenting.
Oh, yeah.
All those
Although,
things
don't do torrenting over mobile. Like,
no, no.
Because they'll just charge you too much for it.
Correct. What else was I going to say? There was, yes, what I was curious to know was how a lot of, because LTE, long-term evolution, or 4G as we know it today, how obviously Vodafone don't have it yet. They've still got issues, which I think we discussed on last week's program, with their mass exodus of a lot of their customers over the past 12 months, if not longer, and also changing.
They've been doing a lot of work to get their 3G network back up to scratch after the shenanigans of merging it with Vodafone and Three's two networks merging together.
Yeah, so we've really got two players in Australia at the moment, Telstra and Optus, doing LTE. Now, looking online, the Optus map seems to cover quite a vast area of suburbia in both Sydney and Melbourne compared to what the Telstra one does. So I'm interested to know, I don't know whether any of our listeners are on the chat at the moment who use Optus LTE, but I'm interested to know what speeds they're getting, which part of the world they're at, because we've come across these maps and these service areas before, and sometimes they're a little bit. I remember Three used to have a problem, Vodafone used to have a problem. Their maps were a bit misleading in respect to what speeds you get and where. So
I think ambitious might be the word.
Ambitious,
you're looking
I like
for.
That word. Yes, yes, I like that word. So it'd be interesting to see what carriers.
We'd like to have coverage in all these areas, even if maybe we don't. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm doing some rural travelling very shortly.
Right.
And I'll be doing LTE tests in some of the rural centres around this particular state.
You're
going to
take an Optus LTE device as well?
No, I don't have one.
I don't have one. Well, you have to go and get one.
I'll have to try and find someone who's...
can lend you one for a bit of a road trip.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, that'd be good. Anyway. Now, in other news that's happened...
Just before you do move on, Telstra are expanding. They've already announced plans in the next year or so to expand their 4G network tremendously wide.
Spend big bucks, they will.
And they're going to cover a huge amount of country that currently is 3G country. So, your situation with the limitations of Telstra's 4G won't last long.
The other thing, too, is these speeds on wireless mobile broadband is getting up there, which means that I wonder who they're going to compete with in some areas coming up shortly. I wonder. Anyway, I'll just leave that thought with you.
Well, I'm going to comment on that thought, because it won't work that way. You can't use that for everybody, because there just isn't enough radio frequency spectrum available.
Yeah, but the Luddites don't know that. Depends on how it's
marketed.
But
that's why it won't work. I mean, you can't build a perpetual motion machine and then expect to run the planet off it. You've got to follow the laws of physics.
You do.
So
you do.
Yes, no, it may sound like a good idea, and 4G speeds when no one else is on the network are really, really good. But if you have, every other house in the suburb trying to connect their home internet over the 4G wireless network, I tell you what, you'll be back in dial-up caveman days.
Ah, bring it on. Hey, I was just reading some of the chat. TPG, this is from Primal in the chat. TPG are cheap, yep. Interesting, 112 worked on the TPG network, but not 000. So, and if 112, obviously, I think is the international, you can dial that on any phone anywhere.
Yeah,
anywhere in the world.
Probably suggests that they've brought in European equipment and haven't known how to reconfigure it correctly for Australia.
Yeah, correct. And it doesn't go... Like, remember when Dodo brought in that router and they took out half of the Eastern Seaboard's internet when they plugged that router in and tried to reroute all of Telstra's packets?
Yes.
Through something? Yeah, well, see, if it's on the cards, isn't it? Some people can make little accidents like that and not pick them up until it's too late.
Yes, well, Dodo are another one that offer extremely inexpensive internet access.
Yeah, traditionally a resold Telstra product, if I recall.
And, yeah, well, again, you get what you pay for.
You do. You do. They've moved into other areas now. Electricity, I think, is one of them. Anyway. you only get 200 volts,
not 240. That's frightening.
Microsoft had a product called Messenger. Do you remember that? It used to annoy you whenever you log on or boot up in the morning.
Yeah, I'm a Messenger user. I use Messenger to keep in touch with certain people overseas.
You'll know more about this than me then.
Yeah, well, this came as quite a shock to me, actually.
Because Microsoft's going to ditch its Messenger services and move everyone to the Skype platform that it bought a few years back.
Yes, well, I remember when they bought Skype that I said, well, look, they've already got their Windows Live Messenger product, which has video chat and instant messaging and all those sorts of things in it. I wonder why they bought Skype. Well, what their plan is they're going to retire what they now call Windows Live Messenger, what everybody on the internet knows as MSN. They're actually going to move all the user accounts, some hundreds of millions of them, if I remember correctly, to merge them in with the Skype user base so that you'll be able to log into Skype with your old MSN login and chat over there.
Well, that's good if it's a seamless move across.
Yeah, well, this is what they say. They'll bring your contact list across and they'll bring your profile across.
And it's just a few, only 100 mil.
I'm 100 million users,
it's not
and
many.
And Skype's currently got about 250... million users, is that right?
Yeah, they're going to merge their 100 million users into Skype's around 280 million users.
There you go.
So that's a big database, so if that falls over, watch out.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. I wonder what they're going to do for people that have existing Skype accounts, whether there'll be a way to merge your two accounts together.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that'll be my situation, is I've got an MSN account.
Which one to use, or which one to log in with.
And then I'll have my MSN account that's been merged into Skype, and I'll have my original Skype account as well.
Mm.
So I wonder what they'll do for users like that. It'll be interesting to see.
Microsoft acquired Skype about a year ago for $8.5 billion US dollars.
Billion.
Yeah, that's right. And 2 weeks ago, unveiled Skype 6 for both Windows and Mac platforms.
Yeah.
So maybe a bit of an aggressive push there, maybe coinciding with the Windows 8. Is it built into Windows 8? I haven't looked yet. Is there a Skype client built into that now because
there's
they own it?
There's something built into Windows 8. There's some sort of VoIP thing built into 8. I'm not sure whether it's Skype-based or MSN-based. I'll have to investigate that. I didn't get as far as finding that out.
All right. Well, hang on to your instant messaging login as it migrates across in the next little bit, I guess.
Yeah. Hang on to your hats, guys.
Yeah, Microsoft has said that it'll all remain intact. But, hey, that's a lot of people to use, and it just takes one database to get a little bit corrupt along the way, and who knows what might happen. Also, new users can expect support on platforms including the iPad, Android, and video calling on mobile phones. Obviously with instant messaging and screen sharing. I wonder if this is a little bit of a consolidated push for Microsoft, like what FaceTime is with the Apple side of things.
Absolutely,
and the instant messaging, so
absolutely.
That it all goes into the one thing. And then, of course, all the telcos are going to start upping the ante like what Telstra has done and charging you more for less bandwidth when you included mobile broadband because they're missing out on things like SMSs and video calls and text because it's being routed a clever way through things like iMessage
through the
and
Skype
FaceTime.
Network. Yeah, now,
and
then, yeah.
And then they'll be through that as well.
Yeah.
So. Times are changing, aren't they, Graham?
Absolutely they are. That's why we love this business, this industry.
Yeah. Now, we had a horse race in this town. We originate in Melbourne, if you haven't quite worked that out now, after 8 years of Tech Talk Radio. Anyway, Telstra recorded a significant drop in data and email traffic running across its Next-G mobile network during the Melbourne Cup. So everyone stopped tweeting while the race was on.
To watch the race. They must have watched it on their television. That's what television's for, live sports.
Exactly. Data usage fell 18% and email traffic by 33% from about 3 o'clock until the end of the race.
Everybody logged on to see how much they'd won or lost.
Yes, lost more the case. But
You didn't win?
No, I was working. I lost doubly so.
And you didn't win the 100 million the same night?
No. Who was giving that away? Was that one of the lotto draws?
One of the lotteries where the same night was a $100 million jackpot.
No, not I.
Well, you're
still here, so you didn't.
I spent about $50 on a ticket in the $100 million draw.
Oh, yeah?
And won 13.
Yeah, better chances of picking the trifecta, I would have thought, on a horse race.
Didn't work out well for me at all.
Anyway, Telstra said that they saw significant decrease in all forms of traffic over the network as soon as the 3 p.m. Came and the horse entered the starting gates. So they all went quiet, stopped tweeting, stopped SMSing. All bets are on. That's it. put your phone down and watch a race. That's it. Oh, I'm going to do Foley now. So, but I find it amazing that they've got people that sit in there and watch that sort of level. There must be a big dip in the GOC. There must be a big sort of graph on the screen there that watches a big dip go through. And someone's
I was
like,
about
oh, look
to
at
say
that.
they just got a machine that watches it and prints out a chart at the end of the day to drop on the managing director's desk.
Oh, is that what it is?
I'm sure that's what it is.
Now, just
before you move on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, television is the place for live sports, and I don't know whether anybody's noticed in the last week or so that cricket is back on our television screens and in our radios.
It is.
Test match cricket, the absolute pinnacle of the game, and Australia at the moment playing the number one test match team in the world.
Oh, in Brisbane?
In Brisbane, yep.
Who are they?
Andrew. South Africa.
Yeah, but we're not a... this is a tech show, Graham. You'll get into trouble. The listeners will arc up.
Wait till I get to my point.
Oh, okay. I'm waiting.
And my point is, Channel 9, why can we not have the cricket in high definition on Gem? Why?
Andy,
why? Why?
Anti-siphoning, my friend. Well, they could do a simulcast, though. They could do a simulcast, but it's anti-siphoning. It's got to be on the main. And we've got this till 2013, the end of 2013. Then
I've
it'll go away.
I've got this nice big screen,
yeah,
and I've got this murky...
you and me both.
576i picture on when I'm trying to watch the cricket.
Yeah, and the cricket is good in HD. I must admit,
the cricket looks brilliant in HD.
Why
can't we see it, Channel 9? Please, can we have the cricket in... I mean, they're showing reruns of old 60s and 70s TV shows on Gem when they should be showing the cricket in high definition. It would look beautiful. Channel 9, get your act together.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're strapped with a bit of legislation called anti-siphoning, and until that that is reprieved, whatever the word is, in the end of 2013, when all the digital TV all the analog TV channels are turned off Australia-wide, we'll see such beasts, such torment for your life, Graham, will continue until then. So halfway through next year's cricket, you'll be on a winner, my friend.
Well, I hope so.
I hope so, too.
I mean, for the television stations, this is your one last reason for breathing. The one last reason for you to even exist is live sports, and you're letting us down so much.
Yeah, well, don't hold your breath, I'm afraid. It's also noteworthy, too, that, you know, why wouldn't you have your primary channel as your high-definition channel? And I think that's more the question that needs to be answered. Like, why isn't the 91s, the 71s, the 21s and all that, why isn't that the high-definition channel? Because that's the main draw card, I would have thought, or the highest rating drawer for the networks. And yet they have the standard def one.
It's where your primetime TV shows are. It's where the TV shows that are made with the best budget that are going to be made in high-definition are going to be. Why waste the high-definition channel on 4:3 content that was made on videotape in the 80s?
Yeah. And what I want to know, too, is when iView's going to lift to HD. Because, theoretically, we've got the bandwidth now to watch high-definition content, but yet everything gets crunched down to small-screen devices.
Well,
on
even on high-definition to be sent over the internet, it's going to get crunched again.
Yeah, but it's not going to be as shabby. Like, I can watch stuff streamed off the BBC in HD, and it's terrific. Better quality than what I watch free-to-air on this country, and that's great.
Yeah, well, that's not hard.
Exactly. It's not hard. So why don't they lift? Let's talk about something else, because we're obviously very passionate, and we'll continue on for that for a while. Sandy, that nasty storm that happened in the United States recently.
Yeah, Hurricane Sandy, or Superstorm Sandy, some people are calling it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It encouraged, it started emailing votes. Technology was starting to be used for those who couldn't get to a polling place. Now, I reckon that was pretty good use of such said technology. Were there any ramifications that you know about people using technology to vote rather than having to go to a place of polling?
Haven't heard, except that what I do know about the voting system in the United States, which is, it's not a federal system, it's controlled by more local interests in each of the various areas, and mostly when they're using any form of electronic voting, it's proprietary closed source systems that people on the ground just don't trust, rightly so. I don't know what system they were using for the email voting. I suspect it was something very informal and sort of cobbled together.
You would have thought, because it would have been very spur of the moment type
minute,
sort of thing.
Yeah, rather than having sort of any decent sort of security checks built into it. So I'm a little bit nervous about the way they. I like the idea of electronic voting, but very nervous about the way they go about it in the US. And
there's got to be a government way of doing things, you know, like as in a or a system well, the, which the is secure is, and trusted.
Well, yeah, the problem is that the business interests get in the government's ear and say that we will build a closed source proprietary system that's very secure and so on. And the government thinks that this is a good idea because it's all closed and locked away and secret. Whereas those of us who understand the technology understand that an open source system that everybody can have eyes on the design of and can be designed properly would actually be more secure if it was implemented properly. But of course, governments don't think that way because they don't understand the technology, and that's where it all falls apart. So all I can say is if you've got any influence in government circles, then that you know make sure that people think very critically, very scientifically in a very logical way about the way to design electronic voting systems and how open or closed they should be.
Yes.
And I certainly heard at least one report of a voter in the US who said that they were going to vote using pencil and paper because they didn't trust the electronic machines.
Oh, yeah. There'll always be someone like that, though. Always.
But I think in the case of the way the system works in a lot of places, that they were quite right to be skeptical.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Moving on. Just something that I know you hate. .com. He got literally told that he couldn't with his new launch. Because where was it?
God,
it was
this bloke again. This.
It was. I thought it was just hilarious. You know, Mr. I'm above the law has been brought down by another country because of the domain in which he registered his new file sharing.
.ga, which is a former French colony in Africa somewhere.
Yeah. Basically, they said no. I'm sorry. You can't do that. So they pulled his site literally.
And well, said, they pulled his domain name. Not
yeah,
his,
yeah. Well, that's
the site.
Yeah.
The site is actually hosted in France, but the domain name's registered.
Well, I thought it was in the cloud.
Well, but the server's got to be somewhere.
Oh yeah, but they found it in France, have they? For that cloud service, that particular thing.
Kim Schmitz, his real name is. He actually did change it legally though to Kim.com.
Yeah. Anyway, Gabon, is that how you pronounce it? Gabon?
I wasn't sure about that. I took a stab at Gabon.
Yeah.
Or Gabon.
Anyway, they suspended the me.ga domain.
And it spells mega.
Yeah. Yeah, it does spell mega. Anyway, Gabon is obviously in Africa.
Yep.
And, anyway, it's probably, I don't know, just another thorn in his side, really, in trying to defeat and give rights holders the grief that we don't deserve.
Kim Schmitz is his original name was.
He's a bit of an interesting camper. Have you seen some of the stuff online about him?
He's a German bloke originally. He had some criminal charges against him in Germany, which I'm not entirely sure what the status ended up being. He operated out of Taiwan or somewhere like that for a while, or China.
No, he's a bit untouchable there, was he?
He was. I think he's persona non grata in Thailand. I think I read somewhere. I'm trying to remember all the details about this. He basically bought himself permanent residency in New Zealand by giving away lots of money to charitable causes,
as you do.
And currently a New Zealand permanent resident.
Okay, New Zealand, you can have him. Oh, that, you know what that means? With everyone migrating across here, you'll probably be over here shortly in Australia.
He's on the Gold Coast wearing thongs.
Is he?
Wandering up and down. Well, most of New Zealand is, aren't they?
Yes, that's very true. Very true indeed.
I'll get in trouble for that.
Whilst looking overseas, Ericsson are laying off 1,550 people in Sweden.
Oh.
Now, they were Sony Ericsson, but I think they've split, and I think Ericsson is now
de-Sonyified.
De-Sonyified. And they are the world's largest telecommunications equipment supplier. They put a lot of gear into telephone exchanges and mobile hardware and stuff like that. The base of those towers that you see around the suburbs.
Lots of telephone exchanges and mobile phone equipment and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, is Ericsson underneath.
Yes. So according to certain news agencies in Sweden, the staff reduction plan means full-time employees will be axed through part-time staff, and short-term contractors also face severance. And they're citing competitive times and really tough times in the telecommunications industry. And I know there's a lot of Ericsson stuff throughout Australia and exchanges and things like that, but maybe we've reached saturation here. I don't know. Maybe Vodafone's check bounced. I don't know.
I don't know. That's unfortunate for Ericsson, isn't it? They're a huge force in the industry.
Indeed. Indeed. Anyway, staff affected by the redundancies will be notified next year, and all divisions at Ericsson will be under the hammer. But fortunately, it seems to be Sweden which is being targeted, which is where their head office is, isn't it?
That's their base. Yeah, that's where they started and where they operate from, yeah.
Hmm. All right, and before we go to the OddSpot gadget app and website of the week, Apple has been ordered to pay around about $358.5 million to patent holding company VimTex after a Texas court found the former infringed four of the latter's patents. So we're still seeing patent wars happening here at the moment, and I suspect this will be on our technological radar for many years to come. As he said, she said, I did, and I didn't, and I'm going to patent it so that you can't use it type sort of stuff. This tit for tat technology. I own it, therefore you can't use it. So it's becoming increasingly frustrating.
Yes.
Anyway, although some media reports said the patent infringement centered on Apple's FaceTime video calling, one called The Verge, which is a fairly reputable website, reported that they were for establishing virtual private networks and domain names. FaceTime doesn't use those features, but Apple argued in court that VimTex, I think that's how you pronounce it, hadn't established any evidence of actual damages as the video calling service had no fees or revenues. It's just built into the OS. You just use it.
Hmm.
Anyway, Apple intends to, as Apple does, fight the case and has filed an objection questioning if VimTex has enough evidence to support its case. Yada, yada, yada. Here we go again. Trademarks aplenty.
Yeah, hard to know how to comment on that without knowing all the fine detail. The devil's always in the detail in those cases.
It is, and especially when it's offshore sort of stuff. So,
Marky Mark saying there was a settlement in the last few days between HTC and Apple.
Oh, did, okay.
I hadn't not sure about that one either. But
yeah, there's lots. It's quite a hot little area of technology.
There are literally dozens and dozens of cases going on all around the world in all different. Markets. So yeah.
There's no one global sort of entity. It all has to be tested in each individual jurisdiction.
And patents that win in one jurisdiction might lose in another, and it's all ridiculously complicated.
Indeed. Unlike this program, it's time for a break. When we come back, OddSpot gadget app and website of the week.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
What does this button do?
Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Have you done your Christmas shopping list yet, Graham? Because I reckon here's
Christmas?
Something. Yeah, no, it's only a month and a bit away.
Oh, no.
A gadget to put on the Christmas list this year, in my opinion, is the iPad Mini. And the reason why I say that is because I've been saying through the show, 7 inches is just the right size. Great for the glove box of the car, taking away with you and doing all sorts of things like that. Any 7-inch device. But the iPad's good. If you're a part of the iPad or the Apple ecosystem, then it's not going to disappoint you. It's a fairly grunty machine, which is resilient, as proven by myself during the course of the week, and it's not going to break the bank. Sure, it's a bit higher priced than some of the Nexuses and things like that, the new ones that are out.
Oh, but with the Apple devices, you do get what you pay for to a large degree, particularly with the tablets. Oh, and I've looked at Android tablets and I've looked at the iPads.
Yep.
And there's just no comparison.
Now, the Minis start off. You can buy them online. There's a 2 or 3 week waiting list at the moment. So now's the time to order them if you want one in your Christmas stocking. You can get them for 16 gig one without the 3G. Starts off at $369, which is about $30 more than an iPod. The new iPods.
That's a lot more affordable than a full-size iPad.
Absolutely. And the Wi-Fi one kicks off at just over $500 for 16 gig. Goes up, obviously, about $100 a go for each of the particular flavours. That's 16, 32 and 64. Comes in two colours, black and white, but you can decorate it all up with the right cover on the front. And
and keep the very short members of the McCollum family happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other benefit of it is if you do want to give one of these as a gift, the Apple Engraving Service is really good. You can actually, when you order it online...
That's a good tip.
It comes gift-wrapped and it comes, you know, Dear Graham, Happy Christmas 2012. And it's all engraved on the back, so...
Andrew's going to get me an iPad mini.
No. So, just some food for thought there. So, if you haven't started your Christmas mailing list and writing it all down to send to Santa in the yellow red box at the end of the street...
Think about sticking a mini on your list.
Ever go one of those. Because if you're going to get an iPod... $30 more. Not bad, is it?
Than an iPod Touch.
Yeah, one of the new iPods. That's the gadget of the week, the new Apple iPad Mini.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, how many times have you decided you needed a sound effect, Graham, or you needed a graphic for a project that you're doing?
Oh, photos to put on web pages for people and stuff like that,
One of the ones we use at work, which I thought, we'll give away some of our trade secrets here, is a place called Video Hive. Now, videohive.net, they have royalty-free videos and they do stock footage and motion graphics, DVD menus and all sorts of interesting project files. We just open up the project and you type your own stuff in there and render it out or copy it out.
Oh, so they already have project files to load up into your editing package.
They do indeed, or into your web design side of things. If you're a designer, whether you want something for your WordPress or whether you want something for your standard, you know, HTML5 website, they've got all sorts of little things
that you can
jump in there and put into your site. Very handy. Saves you reinventing the wheel and it saves you spending big bucks designing stuff because it's all built and tested.
Royalty free, so you pay for it, but then if you use it in your own designs and resell it and all that sort of stuff, you don't have to pay royalties back.
That's right.
Fantastic. That's
right. And it's a great starting block if you want to build a website. So if you've got a Christmas project coming up, holiday project across the course of time, you want to dabble in a WordPress site and you think, oh, I don't like this, this looks awful, then try one of these templates, load it up and start with that because you go, wow, I can customize this. It's me. It's personalized. And there's great opportunities there to embed video, to put photo blogs up, all that sort of stuff. Whatever it is that you do, you can do with one of these templates very easily without all the legwork. Great idea. So if you're looking
Sounds
for something.
Fantastic.
And they started at $1 and worked their way up. I think the maximum, I think the dearest thing on the site's probably about $50. So good stuff to do. Videohive.net is Tech Talk Radio's website of the week. Woo-hoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
This week's app of the week is Consume, a app for the Apple world, for your iPods and iPads and all those sorts of devices, iPad Mini.
It does.
And what it is, it keeps track of your usage, but not just your usage of your broadband for your one device, but it keeps track of all your usages.
Across a lot of different things.
So you can put in all your accounts for all your different things, even things like frequent flyer points.
Yeah,
or
your Dropbox usage, your Gmail usage, all those things which have limits.
Yep.
Globally or locally.
So one app to rule them all. Put in all your limits and things and away you go. It supports a huge number of carriers and
prepaid,
and
postpaid, Australia, New Zealand, all over the world type sort of thing.
That's right, yes.
And it's handy when you're doing Dropbox stuff because I use it quite a bit to see how much space I've got left on my Dropbox and whether
the Dropbox space is sometimes at a premium. You're right.
It is indeed. I must admit, the only issues I've had with it is with some of the Telstra prepaid stuff. It comes and goes, but everything else for postpaid stuff. And see,
even people accessing the website directly for Telstra have the same trouble.
Yeah, that's the reason why, because it all uses the web-based sort of thing. But your Velocity frequent flyers for Virgin, your Qantas frequent flyers, all your airline frequent flyer stuff, it's all there and it ports beautifully onto all devices if you're running Consume. It's about a $3 purchase, $2.95 I think from recollection on the App Store, and it runs on, there's a great version on the iPad. Great version for the iPhone.
$2.99 it says on
there
my
screen.
There
you go, $2.95, so I was 4 cents out.
Yep, so there you go. That's a great little one.
All right, that's the Tech Talk Radio app of the week.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bong. Jam bong.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
As mentioned previously on the show and in previous shows, Microsoft released a new operating system in the last few weeks called Windows 8.
But that's not the odd spot.
How did you go with your first experience using Windows? Oh, you said you had someone tipped you in on how to use it.
Yeah, a little fairy told me to press up in the right-hand corner.
Imagine if your first experience using Windows 8 was not only under adverse conditions of being under the affluence of Inkahole.
Inkahole?
But also being videotaped for the world to see.
Oh, dear.
So, someone's posted online a fantastic video, very funny video of a woman who's been given her first use of Windows 8 after having had several
through the bottom of a glass
of wine. Jennifer is her name.
For work, apparently.
Not safe for work. Now, that's the one warning we'll give on this one, that there is some language in it. There is
not around kiddies.
Some considerable...
put the headphones on. It's
language in there if you're sensitive to that sort of thing, or the kids are around, then be very careful.
If you work in an IT department, you'll be used to that type of language.
This is true. Very funny. Watch this this poor woman try to find a way around Windows 8 through the bottom of her wine glasses. As Andrew said,
funny
lots
stuff.
Of fun. There'll be the link to it. Will be on the website.
Yep. So, all the show notes.
Just be careful about the language there. That's all.
That's it for the show for this evening. You've been listening to the third last Tech Talk Radio. Coming up next week, the second last Tech Talk Radio. Oh, be very quick.
I have to ask you, do you notice anything on my face?
Yeah, the Moe's happening.
Because Ron claimed last week after the show that he couldn't see it, so I was a bit upset with him about that.
Yeah, he's like that.
If you would like to help me support Movember in support of men's health issues, mobro.co/GCTTR. And I think we might still have a couple of spots free for the end of the year show. The links are on the website for that, are they?
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
It's all right, we'll put them there.
We'll put them there, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, that's it for this week. See you guys. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099, or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws, and may not be rebroadcast without approval.